that, and then we talked about our Easter service that'll be coming up here in a few weeks, and how we're going to have our breakfast like we normally do. I did put a notebook up here and a pen, so if you would, if you intend on being here for that breakfast, please put your name down there and a number. If you're going to bring any other people with you besides yourself, be sure to put a number there to represent how many you'll bring, just so we'll have an idea of how much food needs to be prepared. All right, 1 Samuel chapter 28. And I want to preface the things that I'm going to say by pointing out that something happens in this chapter that, as far as I'm concerned, is a very unusual situation. And there's a lot of that in the Bible, to me anyhow. Now, there's some people that know everything, and they got every passage in the Bible figured out and can expound on everything and do it emphatically, but I'm not that smart, okay? There's a whole lot in the Bible I don't understand. And there's some things, quite frankly, I read in the Bible, and I've read them time and time and time and time again, and even after all the times I've read them and read behind other people and read their comments and their explanation and so forth, I still ain't got the foggiest idea. I have some thoughts, you know, some ideas of my own, but I can't be definitive about what a certain passage or certain verses mean. I just do the best that I can. And the truth of the matter is, I was being facetious, and I think y'all know that. The truth of the matter is, nobody understands everything in the Bible, and if they say they do, they're just a liar, okay? I don't care how smart they are and how much Bible they know. If they pass off as they know it all and always got an answer, that's somebody that's just inflated with pride and they're not honest, okay? Because nobody understands it all. Something that you should always look for, I think, in a preacher or a teacher is just all along them telling you, "I don't know." Because that's honesty. That's reality. There's just stuff in here that is hard. I mean, there's some stuff in the Bible that's hard to understand. And unless the Holy Spirit opens your understanding, you're not going to get it. That's just the way it is. But I don't have a problem with that, okay? It doesn't really bother me because I understand that this isn't man's book. This is God's book. God wrote this book. Somebody a whole lot smarter than us wrote the Bible. And just like I heard a fella say one time, if he could understand everything in the Bible, that would mean somebody no smarter than him wrote it. Right? So it ought to give us some level of comfort and assurance that we can't understand everything in the Bible. That means it's a supernatural book. It's proof that it's a book beyond man's comprehension to a certain degree. So I don't necessarily have a problem with it. And this passage here, 1 Samuel 28, has got something in it that, you know, I don't fully understand this situation. And I've read it time and time again and have studied it, and I have talked to other people and got their opinion and their advice about it. And I'm just going to give you what I think about it, and that's about all I can do with it. 1 Samuel chapter 28, verse number 1, "And it came to pass in those days that the Philistines gathered their armies together for warfare to fight with Israel." Now, in the previous chapter, which we studied on Sunday night, we saw how that David, in a time of weakness, a time when he had a lapse in faith, went down to Achish, the king of Gath, and decided to stay there in the land of the Philistines for a while. And just talked about how that was going to present some problems. We saw some of that toward the end of the chapter already, David having to lie and cover up things. And we're going to see, not really in this chapter, this chapter just kind of introduces what is going to be somewhat of a problem, but you don't really get the explanation for it all until you get to chapter 29. But the first few verses here kind of introduce what is going to be something that David has to deal with. Really, God's going to have to get him out of it, is what's going to have to happen. Because remember, he's there with the Philistines, and he'd actually went out, you remember, and fought against some of those heathen nations while he's living there. And when he come back, he lied to Achish and made out like he was fighting against the Israelites. So Achish thinks that he's on their side, okay? Well, you come to chapter 28, verse 1, and it says, "And it came to pass in those days that the Philistines gathered their armies together for warfare." Notice who they're going to fight. To fight with Israel. Well, now that's going to put David in a pickle, isn't it? Because he's down there and he's been passing himself off as fighting against Israel already. So you know that Achish is going to expect him to step up and fight with them. And you see that. "And Achish said unto David, Know thou assuredly that thou shalt go out with me to battle, thou and thy men." Now that's an issue for David. Because David is not the enemy of Israel. He has not been fighting against Israel. David loved his country and loved his people and would never want to fight against them, okay? But he's in this situation, and this is what Achish says to him. He doesn't really give him any wiggle room. He says, "Know thou assuredly that you gonna go, okay? You and your men, you going with us." Well, David, he goes along with it in the beginning, verse number 2, "And David said to Achish, Surely thou shalt know what thy servant can do." He's, you know, saying, "All right, I'm going to go out and you're going to see what I can do. You're going to see firsthand in this battle what I'm able to do as a leader, me and my men. You're going to see that." So he's kind of acting as if he's going to go along with Achish and the Philistines. "And Achish said to David, Therefore will I make thee keeper of mine head forever." It's like, okay, you're going to go out, you're going to prove yourself, so when that happens, I'm going to put you as my main man, as my main protector, the keeper of my head. You know what the keeper of his head would be? Helping him keep his head. So somebody, really, is it protector of the king so that he wouldn't get his head cut off or wouldn't get killed. So it seems as if David's being promoted here. But all of this is just, you know, it's a facade on David's part because he's not against Israel and he's not for the Philistines. But he's got himself in a situation here to where at the moment he's got to kind of play along with this. And that's what's happening. Now, in verse 3 is where this story shifts its focus from David to Saul. And it's really not going to pick back up with David and his circumstance, like I said, until you get to the next chapter. When you get over to chapter 29, that story will pick back up and we'll see what actually happened with David in this situation. But it says in verse 3, "Now Samuel was dead." And we read about that earlier. We saw where Samuel died, but it's just telling us about it again. Now, Samuel was dead, and all Israel had lamented him and buried him in Ramah, even in his own city. And Saul had put away those that had familiar spirits and the wizards out of the land. That's something that Saul had done, and that was actually a good thing that Saul had done because that's what God wanted. God didn't want those kind of people in the land. Matter of fact, hold your place here and go back to the book of Deuteronomy with me. Is this loud? It just seemed like it come on all of a sudden, didn't it? Brother Jason, you turn the volume down just a little bit. I don't know what happened. It just like it come on all of a sudden there. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I need to speak a little louder. Is that what you're saying? Okay. How's that okay? That good? Y'all good with that? Is that too loud, too low? Oh. That okay? All right. All right. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. Deuteronomy chapter 18. obviously, this is back in the law here, and God says, Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 9, and this is Moses speaking, but he's speaking on behalf of the Lord, just telling the people what God expects. When thou art come into the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, thou shalt not learn to do after the abominations of those nations, which shows you what was going on there with those nations. There shall not be found among you any one that maketh his son or his daughter to pass through the fire. That's something that those nations were guilty of, burning, literally burning their children to death in sacrifice to a false god, to an idol. God says, y'all better not do that. Which if you know anything about Israel's history in the Old Testament, you know that they did that. They went in, they did just what God told them not to do. They learned the ways of those heathens, and they did. Matter of fact, there's a place in the Old Testament where it says that they did worse than the heathen. Now, that's a pretty sad testimony when God's people are acting worse than the heathen people. And that's what happened with them. But it says in verse 10, or that useth divination, or an observer of times, or an enchanter, or a witch, or a charmer, or a consulter with familiar spirits, or a wizard, or a necromancer. Now, all of those, they differ in certain ways, but they're all basically the same family. It's the same concept, the same idea with all of these different things that are mentioned there. They're all people that believe that they can prophesy the future. They believe they can talk to the dead. They believe they can conjure up spirits and that sort of thing. And actually, some of them could. But it was something that they were able to do, obviously, because of the devil. You know, it wasn't of God. It was of the devil that they were able to do something like that. And God says, that's what those nations are doing, but y'all don't do that. I don't want any of that stuff going on with y'all. Look at verse 12. For all that do these things are an abomination unto the Lord. So this is one of those things that the Bible says is an abomination to God. Not everything in the Bible is said to be an abomination. I have heard this expression. I don't know the times in my life. All sin is sin. Well, that is a true statement, by the way, if you think about it. All sin is sin. Well, if it's a sin, it is sin. But what people mean when they say that is all sin is exactly the same in the eyes of God. That's not the truth. There are some things that are on a whole other level with God. Now, if it's a sin, it's obviously wrong. God doesn't like it. He hates it. But there's some things that he really hates. There's some things that are on a level that God says are an abomination. Okay. And this that you just read here, verse 10 and 11, all that stuff, those that do those things, verse 12, are an abomination unto the Lord is what the Bible says. And notice this, and because of these abominations, the Lord thy God doth drive them out from before thee. Another thing that I've had asked me many times through the years is why would God tell Israel to go into the land and wipe out all of those people and take the land from them? And they act as if God told his people to go in and kill a whole bunch of sweet, innocent people that were not guilty of anything. The Bible very clearly shows that those people were very wicked and very vile and full of all sorts of ungodliness that was worthy of death. Okay? Like, for example, burning their children to death. If there's anything that a person should die for, okay, I think that's capital punishment level there. Okay? And that's it. And there's actually another place back in chapter 9 where God tells you why he did this. So don't ever fall into this mindset. And a lot of that is just people trying to get us to have a bad idea about God, to think that he's unfair and unjust in his dealings. Don't ever fall into the trap of thinking that God told his people to go out and go in there and wipe out a bunch of sweet, nice, innocent folk that weren't doing wrong. No, he just used his people to clean out a bunch of ungodliness is what he did. Okay, so that's what that was. But what I wanted you to see there was how God didn't want that stuff going on in the land or among his people. So that explains why it says here in chapter 28 and verse 3 that Saul had put away those that had familiar spirits and wizards out of the land. Those with a familiar spirit, that's like somebody that's familiar with something, like familiar of current events, future events, able to communicate with people that an individual would be familiar with, a family member or something like that. A lot of these profess to be able to communicate with the dead. And as I say, there was times when that went on. But again, this stuff's not of God, okay? That's not from the Lord, but that's the stuff that's going on. And the reason it brings it up here in verse 3, it'll be explained as we go on. But it says in verse 4, and the Philistines gathered themselves together and came and pitched in Shunem. If you go back to Joshua, you find that this Shunem was a part of the inheritance that was given to Issachar, the tribe of Issachar. So this was in their inheritance. And Saul gathered all Israel together, and they pitched in Gilboa. So you got a situation again like you find in other places where Israel and the Philistines are getting ready to do battle against each other, and both armies are pitching in a certain place, and they're just kind of getting ready to come together. Well, it says in verse 5, when Saul saw the host of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart greatly trembled. He's really scared. His heart is literally trembling on the inside of him for fear, because he sees this huge army. And I feel like a lot of his fear also was a result of the fact that he knew that the Lord was no longer on his side. Okay, he understood that. And that is further borne out by what you read in verse 6. And when Saul inquired of the Lord answered him not, neither by dreams, nor by Urim, nor by prophets. So when he starts talking to God about this and praying and trying to get some direction and get some help, get some counsel from God, you know what he gets? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. God has nothing to say. God had already spoken to Saul several times in the past, and it really hadn't done him much good. Because when he spoke to him, Saul rebelled and did what he wanted to instead of what God told him to do. So the Lord said, I'm just not going to talk to you anymore. Now, that's a place you want to avoid in your life. That's a bad place to be there, brother, when you pray and God just ain't got nothing to say to you no more. That's but you know what can get you in that kind of shape? Being rebellious when he does speak to you. That's what got Saul in a mess. God speaking to him and speaking to him, and him just being rebellious and stubborn and stiff-necked and doing what he wanted to instead of listening to what God told him to do. And if you just, you know, if a person takes that mindset and that attitude, you know, God speaks to them and speaks to them and advises them and directs them and gives them counsel, and they just whatever. Well, then there's going to come a point where they're going to want to hear from God. God's just not going to have anything to say to them. We've looked at it before, but I think it's worth looking at again. If you'll turn to the book of Proverbs, chapter 1. Proverbs, chapter 1. Proverbs 1:24. This is a tremendously sobering passage to me. Proverbs 1:24. God says, because I have called and ye refused, I have stretched out my hand, and no man regarded. But ye have set at naught all my counsel, and would none of my reproof. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your fear cometh. When your fear cometh as desolation, and your destruction cometh as a whirlwind, when distress and anguish cometh upon you, look at this. Then shall they call upon me, but I will not answer. It doesn't say he couldn't answer. He says he won't answer. But now why is that? Why is that? Is it just because he's some mean God? You know, no. It's because of what you just read in 24, 25, and 26, and 27. God spoke to him and spoke to him. He gave him counsel. He stretched out his hand. He spoke to him. But they set it all at naught. They just considered what God had to say is nothing. Insignificant and unimportant. So God says, when your life starts falling apart and everything goes haywire, then this is what you're going to do. You're going to call out to me. When your life goes to pieces because you have refused my counsel, then you're going to call out to me and you're going to want my help and you're going to want me to answer you, but then I'm not going to answer you. Now, that's rough. That's rough. But that's in the Bible, isn't it? I mean, we're not making this stuff up. That's in the Bible. So, you know, you have to be careful. Verse 29, for that they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would none of my counsel. They despised all my reproof. Therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way and be filled with their own devices. God's saying, I'm just going to let them sleep in the bed they've made. They're going to eat of the fruit of their own way. They made their choice, so I'm just going to let them lay in that bed, is what he's saying. That's what's going on with Saul. He made his bed. He made his choice. God told him what to do. He was rebellious. And it cost him. And now he's wanting some help. He's wanting to hear from God because he's afraid. Remember that thing we just read in Proverbs 1? When your fear cometh? Well, his fear has come now. And he's wanting to hear from God. God has nothing to say to him. Don't talk to him anymore. I think it ought to help all of us be more cautious about the way we respond to God speaking to us. Whether he speaks to us through our own personal Bible reading, or he speaks to us through a Sunday school lesson, or he speaks to us through a sermon that is preached. However, maybe he speaks to us through a friend that gives counsel to us from the Bible. Ever how it is, however God speaks, our attitude should be that of Samuel when God spoke to him. Y'all remember earlier on in here when God kept speaking to Samuel that night? And he'd go to Eli thinking it was Eli. Remember what he said? Speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth. That ought to be our attitude. Lord, I just want you to speak to me, and I want to hear what you got to say. And then do what he tells us to do. But anyway, Saul's trying to get something from the Lord. He can't get anything. He can't get anything from a dream. Which was very common at this time. God would show people things through a dream, nor by Urim. You had the Urim and another thing called the Thummim, and those were things that went into the breastplate of the priest, along with other stones that were there, and they would wear that in the priestly garment when they went in before the Lord. And they were associated with what you find here, just trying to ascertain the will of God about things. Well, Saul tried to use that. God still gives no response, nor by prophets. So obviously there were other prophets around, but God wouldn't say anything to Saul through those prophets. He gets nothing. So verse number 7. And this here begins the passage that I was talking about in the beginning of, you know, it's just a strange happening. Then said Saul unto his servants, seek me a woman that hath a familiar spirit that I may go to her and inquire of her. Now remember, he's done put them out of the land, supposedly, right? Anybody with a familiar spirit that's a wizard or whatever, done put them out. Well, he tried to get something from God. He can't get anything from God, so he thinks, okay, now I'll see if I can get something through a familiar spirit. Okay. So he says, seek me a woman that hath a familiar spirit, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And his servant said to him, Behold, there is a woman that hath a familiar spirit at Endor. That shows you there were some things that the servants knew the king didn't even know. Because they knew about this woman that had the familiar spirit at Endor, but he didn't know about it. But his servants knew. So sometimes the servants know certain things that the king doesn't know. So, verse number 8, and Saul disguised himself and put on other raiment other than his normal kingly attire and went, and two men with him, and they came to the woman by night. Why would they do that? Right, trying to cover it all up, you know. He realizes that they ain't supposed to be anybody there with a familiar spirit because he put them out of the land. And then he realizes that he's not supposed to be doing this. So he disguises himself, puts on different clothes. He goes at night, kind of like Nicodemus when he went to the Lord. He went to the Lord by night. He's trying to, you know, just keep people from finding out that he's going there. So he goes there at night. He's disguised in his clothing, and he said, I pray thee, divine unto me. To divine is to foretell, to prophesy. Divine unto me by the familiar spirit. And bring me him up, whom I shall name unto thee. Now, what I want to do is I just want to read down through this passage here, and then I want to go back and I want to talk about some stuff out of this. Okay. So let's just read this passage, verse 9. And the woman said unto him, Behold, thou knowest what Saul hath done, how he hath cut off those that have familiar spirits and the wizards out of the land. Wherefore then layest thou a snare for my life to cause me to die? And Saul sware to her by the Lord, saying, As the Lord liveth, there shall no punishment happen to thee for this thing. Then said the woman, Whom shall I bring up unto thee? And he said, Bring me up Samuel. And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried with a loud voice. And the woman spake to Saul, saying, Why hast thou deceived me? For thou art Saul. And the king said unto her, Be not afraid, for what sawest thou? And the woman said unto Saul, I saw gods ascending out of the earth. And he said unto her, What form is he of? And she said, An old man cometh up, and he is covered with a mantle. And Saul perceived that it was Samuel, and he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed himself. Samuel said to Saul, Why hast thou disquieted me to bring me up? And Saul answered, I am sore distressed, for the Philistines make war against me, and God is departed from me, and answereth me no more, neither by prophets nor by dreams. Therefore I have called thee, that thou mayest make known unto me what I shall do. Then said Samuel, Wherefore then dost thou ask of me, seeing the Lord is departed from thee, and is become thine enemy? And the Lord hath done to him, referencing David, as he spake by me, for the Lord hath rent the kingdom out of thine hand and given it to thy neighbor, even to David, because thou obeyest not the voice of the Lord, nor executest his fierce wrath upon Amalek. Therefore hath the Lord done this thing unto thee this day. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with thee into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow shalt thou and thy sons be with me. The Lord also shall deliver the host of Israel into the hand of the Philistines. Then Saul fell straightway all along on the earth and was sore afraid because of the words of Samuel. And there was no strength in him, for he had eaten no bread all the day nor all the night. Now I'm going to stop there because that's the main gist of the passage. That's kind of a strange story, isn't it? That's just weird. And like I say, I've read it a lot of times and talked to a lot of people about it. But what you got is Saul comes to this woman here. Now, I want to go back through here and just point out some things to you. First of all, this stood out to me. In verse number 7, then said Saul unto his servants, Seek me a woman that hath a familiar spirit. The question that I had when that stood out to me is, why did he specifically ask for a woman? Why wouldn't he ask for a man? And I've heard some people say, well, it was only women that had the familiar spirits. And well, that's not true. Look back at Leviticus chapter 20. I'm going to tell you my idea, but now, you know, this is my idea. I have no doubt about this. There was a definite reason why he asked specifically for a woman. I know that. It wasn't an accident. There's some reason why he wanted a woman. Leviticus chapter 20, in verse number 27. 20:27. A man also, or woman, that hath a familiar spirit. You see that? A man or a woman that hath a familiar spirit, or that is a wizard, shall surely be put to death. They shall stone them with stones. Their blood shall be upon them. That shows you the punishment for people that did that. God said they're to be stoned to death. But what you see in the beginning of that verse is it could be a man or a woman that had a familiar spirit. So the fact that he asked for a woman wasn't because only a woman could have a familiar spirit. There had to be some other reason why he asked just for a woman. This is just my thinking, okay? I don't know if this is why. I'm just thinking. He's the king, and he has said all the wizards, all the familiar spirits, got to go, can't have them, or they got to die. That's the way it's got to be. Okay, now just put yourself in the situation. If you are a person that has a familiar spirit, or you're one of these kind of folk right here, and the king is against you, you're probably not going to like that king, are you? That's like the people in our country right now that are guilty of abominations. And you get a president that wants to pass some laws that are against that, like against abortion and against homosexuality. Well, they just raise all kind of hell, don't they? Amen. They don't like that president. They slander that president. They lie about that president. They want to impeach that president. They want to do everything they can against that president. You know why? Because that president is against the way they have chosen to live their lives. And I kind of think, if you had people back here that were these kind of folk and you got a king that's not for them, well, they're not going to like that king. Okay. And so I'm just thinking, he says, get me a woman, because if he shows up there and it's a man and the king's just him and a couple of guys with him and it's a man and he doesn't like the king and he thinks, okay, I got the king. He's over here at my house. He's come. He ain't got his big army with him. I'll just take care of this fella right here. Right now, while I got the chance, I'll get rid of that guy. And we won't have to deal with him no more. I'm just thinking, okay, that maybe Saul asked for a woman because he felt like if things got out of hand, that perhaps he might could handle a woman easier than he could a man. Okay. I know I got to be careful about saying stuff like that nowadays because women get offended by that sort of stuff, you know. Anything a man can do, I can do better, that kind of thing. And I'll tell you what's the God's truth. Now, I've seen some women I didn't want to tangle with. That's the truth. But y'all know as well as I do, under normal circumstances, men normally are physically stronger than women, right? That's the normal situation. So I'm just throwing that out there as a possibility as to why he asked for a woman. That way, if something got out of hand there, he felt like maybe he could intimidate a lady or handle a lady easier than he could a man. If it's not that, I don't have a clue. I really don't have the foggiest idea. But I do know he did ask for a woman, and there's a reason why he asked specifically for a woman. Now, we're about out of time, so we'll stop, and we'll come back to this in Sunday school, and we'll try to go on down through this passage and figure out what we can here. Any questions about what we looked at?